Catherine for your very kind words. unfounded. So, yes, I'm going to say something about my current research project, which has been going on for a very long time. I fear it's ended up being much bigger than I had imagined when I started, which is on theatre and the academies of the early modern Italy. So this will be a monograph, hopefully coming out fairly soon. So I felt that I wanted to just kind of talk a little bit through the kinds of sources that I've been looking at as I've been working on this. And I've learned a lot of very interesting things already today from other colleagues in different areas. So, and I want to think a little bit more about how these could be brought together in a database and how they would together sort of enrich our understanding of academies' activities of theatre as well as other activities, and also to think as I'm going along about some of the methodological challenges that this involves. So, Italian academies, as we've already heard and we picked up, were very significant producers of secular theatre, especially over the 16th and 17th centuries that I've been looking at primarily, despite recurrent bans and prohibitions on public theatrical performances during that period. The Intronati Academy of Siena, which, as we've heard, is, can be considered a foundational model for academies founded in 1525, was, of course, a famous theatrical innovator, as were several other early academies like the Congrega dei Rozzi, also of Siena, the Umidi of Florence, and the Infiammati of Padova, all of which we've already heard about in passing. Interestingly, these academies were founded just around the time when professional theatre troupes, or Commedia dell'arte, was first documented in 1545. And over the next century and a half, academies would continue to operate in parallel with professional troupes. And they had some really quite interesting relationships of rivalry and less acknowledged emulation and sort of sharing of interests. Academies also sometimes had close interconnections with princely courts, already heard, and so I would argue that academy theatre really needs to be situated as a kind of a third decidedly hybrid and civic sphere of theatre production alongside these other major producers, but it is one that is frustratingly difficult to pin down. So just to give some sense of the number of academies that we're dealing with here, back in 1982, Amadeo Quandam, in his very famous survey essay, estimated that 4.2% of 16th century academies, 16 in all, had a special interest in theatre. Twice as many in the 17th century, talking about raw numbers, and with more still in the 18th century. What his quantitative analysis does not clarify, though, is what he means by a special interest. I mean, is he referring just to performance and composition? Of course, we know that academies were also involved in criticism of theatre and also patronage. And nor does Quandam state which academies he includes. So if we broaden the picture to include the ones which engaged with theatre in these various ways, I think the statistics are certainly going to need some upwards revising. Just for Florence, Jean Boutier and Maria Pia Paoli have estimated that about 42% of academies, 45 in all, had significant theatrical activity in the 16th to the 18th centuries. And as we just saw in Milan, I think I've tried, if I've totted up the numbers correctly, 6 of the 22 had theatrical interests as well. And these include, of course, some academies that are still very little known, but also other academies that are better known for other activities, like, for example, the Accademia della Crusca. You think of it, of course, as being mainly concerned with the promotion of the Tuscan vernacular, and it's famous for creating the first dictionary of the vocabulary in 1612. But initially, when they gathered, their aim in 1586 was to leggere, comporre e far spettacolo, so to read, lecture, compose, and produce spectacle. So, what do we mean by academy drama theatre? Well, I think we can't really generalise when we're dealing with about 800 academies or so over the 16th and 17th century, but we can find certain sort of common factors, I think. Notably, I think we should just start off by saying that we're not dealing with what in English is termed academic drama, which was produced in Latin, mainly in university circles. In Italian academies, it was mainly produced in vernacular, or vernaculars, mostly original, though we do find some translations of classical works, and it appears in many different forms, as we'll come on to see later. Academies, since they were based on voluntary association, so usually, as Lorenzo has already said, a sort of composite group, so by men of different social backgrounds and professions, the theatre produced in this milieu was generally amateur or semi-professional, although there were links, obviously, less well declared with professional sometimes. It was also undertaken especially for occasional or festive purposes, not for profit. And this meant, at least in this period, and this meant that academies were not necessarily bound by the kind of commercial imperatives that defined the travelling acting troupes, and nor by the dynastic and propagandistic programmes that shaped grand court theatre. So potentially, academies had much more freedom, and they had to were able to experiment more with different types of performances. But at the same time, academies had to fund their activities, and this could either be through collective payments or through external patronage. And this all, the question of money, I think, is important as well. It did affect what and how they performed. So it's no surprise then that academies were interested in theatre, given their interests, as we've seen, in corporate productions, things like we see lots of printed anthologies, for example, in the database. And they were interested in, of course, the humanist study of classical texts and innovative experimentation with new writing and sciences. So that would feed into their ideas on stage design and lighting technologies, for example. And more broadly, the Academy's interest in theatre fits with their strong oral and rhetorical culture, as we've just been hearing about, and their taste for ritual, spectacle, and serio ludere. And in this way, then, theatrical performances could fulfil the Academy's often stated social mission to educate and entertain audiences, both internally, but also, importantly, externally. So we're bridging. So, returning now, after this sort of introduction, to the question of sources for Academy Theatre, I want to suggest, first of all, that archival and manuscript sources, as we've already been hearing, provide very different perspectives from what is found in print. In my experience, I found that they allow for a more fine-grained and obviously more continuous sense of what was going on in practice. So who was writing what, performing what, when, who for, and how. So the idea of process, you get a sense from this kind of documentation. They often offer insights into the Academy's aims and relations within their socio-political context and wider cultural networks. Perhaps, and it's again something we've just been hearing about, they also allow us at times to capture the less official and private aspects of academic activities, so the more kind of ludic, maverick, or even subversive aspects. So I'm not suggesting, of course, that manuscript or archival sources should be prioritised over printed ones. And in fact, for many academies, all that we have to go on are, of course, printed sources. And archival sources certainly cannot be seen as objective or authentic, as Filippo Vivo has very clearly shown us. But they were produced for very different purposes and audiences. And I think that's something that I'm sure we'll come back to in the roundtable. And so I think there's this kind of critical dialogue when these sources exist in different forms, how they interrelate. And one can get some very interesting insight sometimes into how academies very carefully manage their use of documentation, whether it's in print, in manuscript, or their own archival sources, which reflects their cultural choices and socio-political positioning. So to look at some examples now, I want to start with some texts related to theatre, and I thought it would be helpful just to compare what kind of information you find in printed sources in the Italian Academy's database and what is available in manuscript. So in the Italian Academy's database, we find various kinds of printed editions of dramatic texts, so compositions by academies both collectively and individually. I think that's another interesting thing about theatre text. We find translations, as I've said, and sometimes also sort of performance-oriented paratexts like intermedi and descriptions of performances. Also, we find under books various theoretical works on drama, commentaries, critical polemics, for example, on new plays like Guadagnini's Passo Fido, which sort of reflect the very intense intellectual interest in classical and modern drama by some academies, particularly influenced, of course, by the critical discussions on Aristotle's Poetics from around the 1540s. So we get information from this database then on what was authorised for print by academies through a system of rigorous peer review and selection, and what was also later collected by bibliophiles or bought by general readers, perhaps with a view to performance as well. And I think this data is also, if we break it down a little bit in terms of the plays, interesting in terms of what kind of genres were created. I mean, there is a tendency, colleagues have said, oh, academies only produce tragedies, didn't they? And as we've already heard, no, that the answer is that's not, at least from the data that we have in the database, we find that comedies of various different kinds, as Roberto Carpani has already suggested, were produced in this context. And also the kind of new genres, like the favola pastorale, the tragicommedia, and other much more hybrid forms were produced in academies. I particularly like the tournée, these huge, sometimes very elaborately choreographed with spectacular effects. And so for the in Ferrara, this is not associated with this one, to give you an idea, certainly the Intrepidi Academy of Ferrara staged one where we have a knight descending on a cloud on a live horse who then descends onto the stage and starts jousting. We also find the odd religious performance associated with an academy. I think, you know, that points to interesting cross-relations between what was going on also in confraternities at the time. So, of course, these images from printed books can suggest theatrical modalities and structures as well, like this one from the Accademia dei Gelati, but they need to be treated very carefully. Obviously, we only have to think of festival books to be very well aware of the kind of idealising commemorative function often in printed books. So, lots of valuable data in the database, but I think once we start digging into manuscript and archival sources, we realise just how skewed and limited this picture is. In reality, these kind of printed texts seem to be just the tip of the iceberg, and huge numbers of dramatic compositions seem to have been produced in academies as part of their ongoing discussions and experiments with drama for reading aloud, for criticism, perhaps performance. And as we've heard already, I mean, oral, so manuscript culture was very much practiced well into the 17th century, particularly in reserved settings like academies. Now, of course, some of these, amongst the comments and lectures on plays, you find that some of them, of course, were probably in manuscript for reasons of tact. So some extremely unpleasant giudizi on plays that were submitted to the Accademia Olimpica, which are found in the Vatican Library, for example. So assembling what was unprinted in relation to academies is, as I've found in my own research, really a very large task, but it can be quite illuminating, I think. So I tried to do this for the Nominati Academy of Parma, also based on the work of Lucia De Narosi. And what you can see here is that you have 9 printed plays that are associated with just 3 members, but you have the same number that were produced in manuscript, mostly now lost, by 5 other dramatists. So it gives a sense of, you know, just the kind of prolific, much bigger interest in drama, in composition. But it also makes us wonder why certain things were not printed. Were they not good enough? Were they not finished? Were they too polemical? I think these Domini's tragedy entitled Cristo is perhaps interesting given that the Index of Parma of 1580 may, you know, have come shortly before this. It's not always straightforward, though, to document what's the links between manuscript drama or printed drama and performance. And there's no evidence for performance by the Nominati. In fact, there's no archival record as such. And my own reference, research rather, on Veneto academies indicate they did not always perform plays composed by their members. So for public performances, so this is for external guests and political figures, as we've heard already something about, they did tend to select rather older theatrical texts by sort of well-known classics, modern and ancient, which may have represented a safer choice, especially given political and religious scrutiny of secular theatre. Now, if we turn in terms of performance to the archival documentation where this exists, we get a sense, very occasionally we get a sense, that more experimental or polemical works were also being performed privately. So in 17th century Florence, for instance, we find that sort of artist-style performances were being given by the Accademia degli Incostanti for the Medici Grand Duke, in private for him, at his bedside. And in Vicenza, we have the Olimpici again. The academicians in 1564 gave a private carnival performance of Machiavelli's Mandragora, 5 years after the author had been put on the index. And so we only learn about this, obviously, in the Atti. And I'll just read you this, I'll read it in Italian. Perché gli accademici di comune consenso hanno recitato così fra loro la Mandragola, commedia del Machiavelli, conferma risoluzione e intenzione che ciascun accademico paghi la parte sua della spesa fatta in detta commedia, ed essendosi fatti i conti, si trova di essere stato speso trono 120, però l'andrà a parte che ogni accademico sia obbligato a pagare troni 3 per ogni ducato per una volta sola per detta spesa. So unfortunately, this, as I said, is pretty rare to find this kind of information, but it does give us some kind of indication of how the play was performed in private by the academicians, fra loro, presumably then with an all-male cast, without a very elaborate set, given the costs are pretty moderate, and they were met by the members themselves. So I think this gives a very nice contrast to the kind of public performances that were going on, and gives a sense of sometimes how academies' cultural choices were made and their sometimes ambiguous relations with official culture. So this brings me to my final point, I've got a few minutes left, about how or how far we can use archival documents to understand theatre production in academies. I must emphasise again that archival documentation is rare. Quondam notes that only 10% of the circa 2,000 academies archived by Mylender have left traces of legislative apparatus. I think that remains for us to test still. But archival records are also extremely variable in terms of quantity and quality, and even for the best documented and still existing academies like the Olimpici, records can be dispersed and frustratingly incomplete. And we have to be aware of these kind of gaps and inconsistencies. A recurring problem is that the minutes of academy meetings, which I've tended to use like this, were often recopied in later centuries with various selections and deletions in order to shape appropriately eulogistic, monumentalising accounts of local history. And so it is quite interesting going back where you can to other sources. And I was struck by what Filippo was saying also about the sommari, because these are often things as well that you get, and what is summarised and what is not. But academies may also have been deliberately sparse with their own record keeping, and it's perhaps no coincidence that the Atti of the Filarmonici of Verona are missing in the late 1580s, when we know that at least its library was inspected by the Inquisition. And so one wonders how far archival holdings were similarly subject to control and visitations in the way that fraternities were, which might explain some reticence and also regarding performances. So what kind of archival documents can one find relating to theatre? Well, wouldn't we all love to find a nice, neat archive that just had, you know, stuff for our discipline? Well, unfortunately, we need to, as others have shown, look across a very wide range of sources where they exist. So the kind of things then are these atti, diari, memorie, summari is mentioned, which can be very helpful, certainly in documenting deliberations and planning of performances, whether these were realised or not. And often we don't really get any sort of feedback afterwards, it's just the preparation. And these can show discussions of suitable text, performers, and venues. Other useful books are the sort of academy books, as they're sometimes known, the sort of the libri, the list of members, libri di querele, books of complaints, and the mission statements of academies as well, which may suggest the obligations of members and the relative importance given to theatre. And then we have account books, which present useful insights, as well as letters. And I'll just quickly show some letters here that were exchanged by the actress Isabella Andrini with the Accademia Filarmonica, and letters describing a performance here of Aminta. I was going to say something very briefly about the space, but which again Lorenz has mentioned, and the difficulties in performances often in very cramped quarters of academies, which made them look then to doing things like garden performances, performing in private court theatres and elsewhere. And as we said, financial matters are things that regularly crop up, at least in the Veneto accounts that I have looked at. So just to conclude then, how should we capture this information? Well, it's only really from amassing this kind of documentation on a much larger scale, I think, across many different centres, that we can really get this sense of how and how far academies get engaged with and invested in theatre and spectacle more broadly. And we need to now consider how to archive this activity meaningfully through digital tools to be able to access and evaluate, I think, these different kinds of sources and see how they relate to the broader range of documents available for academies, which will also be interesting for people studying confraternities and other kinds of groups. And so I think, final sentence, a newly configured database will then include these kind of various sources, and will also need to have very clearly cross-matched metadata. These were some of the things that I was suggesting, thinking when I was trying to think about what I would want to look for, and perhaps be linked also to many very valuable databases and digital resources, for example, on theatre and manuscript, as well as individual academies. And this will enable us to bring to light this prolific and sometimes pioneering aspect of academies' activities, which crosses the borders between private and public, from local, and even sometimes to transnational. Thank you.